Okay, this is a regular scheduled meeting of the Public Facilities Committee, Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012. Here for the start of the meeting is Alderman Crosley, Alderman Lappin, Alderman Susan, what's your name? What, I don't know. Susan Albright and our committee clerk, what's your name? Shawna Sullivan and myself, Alderman Salvucci. Okay, first item up, 150-12. Is Mr. Powers here?
I am.
Would you please join us at the table, sir? James Powers, 11 Star Road, West Newton, appointed as a member of the Designer Selection Committee for a term of office to expire on December 31st, 2013. Thank you very much for coming, and I guess you can start us off by telling us a little summary about yourself and why you wanted to become a member of the Designer Selection Committee.
Well, someone I'm not quite sure recommended me. And Bob Rooney called me up and asked me if I'd join the committee, and I agreed to. I'm a civil engineer. I graduated from Worcester Polytech and went to work for Metcalf and Eddy, which is a very large international company, and I worked quite a bit all over the country and in five or six foreign countries as well. Did an awful lot of traveling. I was always a frequent flyer for them. And then about 25 years ago now, I was working 2 weeks a month in St. Paul, Minnesota, and 2 weeks a month in Houston, Texas, and 3 days a month home. And the judge took over the MDC's water and sewer functions and established the Mass Water Resources Authority. So I got asked to join that, and I said, that sounds close to home, which sounds a lot more convenient. And so I joined the MWRA, and I was Assistant Director of Capital Engineering and Construction, and we spent $7 billion of the ratepayers' money and did an awful lot of construction, cleaning up Boston Harbor and rehabbing a lot of the old and failing infrastructure. And that was a very enjoyable job. So I retired 8 years ago and have been happily retired since. So this is a I have the time for volunteer work, and this sounded very interesting, and it's evaluating architects and engineers for building projects is something I'm pretty familiar with, so sounded
very
like
good.
A good fit.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Powers?
Do you miss travel?
I miss the frequent flyer miles.
Okay,
anybody else, any questions?
I may just, really, this, the thing that cinched this was that he lived on the same street as Bob Arubas, the commissioner. Very highly, he was my reference. I think also from an aspect of the Designer Selection Committee, which is up to date, has been 100% architects. And I think the, both Mr. Powers and Mr. Tucker add a different dimension to that selection committee that we feel is important in the selection of designers of large projects to evaluate engineering aspects of it as well as the sustainability of those. So I think it helps to round out the the resumes that are at the table.
Thank you, Bob. Yes, sir.
I just want to say thank you.
Thank
you for being willing to serve, because there's a lot of construction projects that are approved. And so it's nice to have you on board.
Well, thank you.
I also want to add my thanks, and it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll move approval.
All in favor? 4-0. You're in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
There's a line out the door, you know.
Benjamin Tucker, is he here tonight? Want to join us at the table, please? This is 151-12, Benjamin Tucker, 12 Nathan Road, Newton Center, appointed as a member of the Design and Selection Committee for a term of office to expire on December 31st, 2013. You're on.
Same girl, same place.
Same thing.
I give a little history. I was trained as an architect, so I got a little bit of an architectural background, but I quickly went into construction with the intention of making myself a better architect, and never went back. So I spent 10 years working for Skanska, managing large-scale commercial construction projects downtown Boston, ranging from renovations of high-rises in Post Office Square all the way up to Gillette Stadium. After that, I went to work for Jones Lang LaSalle for a number of years as a owner's representative for real estate development projects. So I managed the construction projects from the other side of the table for a few years. And currently, I now work for Chapman Construction. I'm the director of building performance there, right here in Newton, and commercial construction projects again. And my role there is primarily spearheading our sustainable construction practices and implementing our standard procedures to enhance green building practices within our company. It's one of our primary focuses. Most recently I've been also involved in High Performance Building Coalition for the past 3 years here in Newton, so I'm very interested in bringing sustainable thinking and energy efficiency to the designer selection process as well as the construction process.
Comment. Of course, I know Ben from the High Performance Building Coalition, and he's no stranger to volunteering his expertise to the city. And I'm very enthusiastic about you joining, officially joining a body. And just wanted to mention to the rest of my colleagues who are invited every year to go to Chapman's annual gathering. And they're a really interesting company in Newton. They are one of the several that we have who are focused on sustainable principles and sort of new technologies and so forth. And the building that they have renovated for themselves is something to look at. It's got solar arrays on the roof and plus a roof deck. And I don't know, it's very nicely done, and the food is amazing.
Took the opportunity to try and practice what we've been preaching, so right. It is sustainable as possible.
So I want to thank you as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate the time that you're about to put in. I'd like to move to approval.
Okay, thanks.
I also want to offer my thanks. Anybody else?
I just appreciate the different perspectives that we're going to get on the design review committee.
Great. Okay, all in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. You're in.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
Okay, next item. 152-12. Robert Rice, Danberg, Blazer, and Schwartz requesting the city of Newton name the expanded sidewalk in front of 4 Hartford Street at the corner of Lincoln Street and Newton Highlands as Rodney Barker Square to recognize Rodney Barker's decades of work of public service in Newton Highlands. Are you presenting this to us tonight, Mr. Wright?
I am presenting this tonight.
Would you please?
It was discussed that Rodney has been in Newton Highlands for 50 years. He, what isn't in this letter, he was PTO president the high school. He was one of the founding members of the Newton Highlands Neighborhood Area Council. He was on the Board of Aldermen for 12 years. He was on the school committee for 8 years. And after retiring from the Board of Aldermen, recently over the last 2 years, he's come back and he has re-entered and he's back on the Newton Highlands Area Council as well. Rodney's the only member that, there are 9 members of the Newton Highlands Neighborhood Area Council, and there are 9 members of the High Community Center Board, which runs the High Community Center. And Rodney's the only member that is on both bodies. He's both on the High Board and he's on the Area Council. So the Highlands community, as you've seen this letter, both the Area Council and the High Community Center support with it honoring Rodney, by naming the plaza, the street extension, the sidewalk extension in front of Bread and Chocolate as Rodney Barker Square. And we're trying to do this for Newton Highlands Village Day, which is happening June 10th this year, to have all the awards and presentations actually happen in that area, so that way we can acknowledge Rodney.
Questions?
Is this an area, is this an area that's going to be planted or needs to be maintained?
No, it's already been in place. It's a brick area. It was developed, at one point it was a small sidewalk. It's an extended sidewalk. It was done by CDBG money back in the 1970s. There's three benches, it's four trees, and there's basically it's already maintained.
Is this that little triangle?
It's a little triangle in front of Bread Chocolate. It's that little place where people sit.
It used to be the ice cream store there.
So it's basically that little area in front of Bread Chocolate.
We are now joined by Alderman Gentile, Alderman Lennon, and Alderman Rado. Gentlemen, we are discussing the item number 15212, which is the Rodney Barker Square.
I'd also like to acknowledge Bruce Gregory, who's a member of the New Towns Area Council, and Mildred Hutchinson and Dick Hutchinson, and Mildred is on the board of directors of the High Council. My boss.
I'm just curious, does the city have any rules or regulations or practices or guidelines for this?
I don't have any idea.
I don't think so, no.
They did it with Philip Brandman.
Okay.
And no money will be exchanged.
For this actual, who's funding this?
Yeah. the High Trade Center will be funding the sign. The only thing is putting the sign in place in a pole. And the High can do the funding and work with DPW for signage.
Are there standards for the sign?
It's funny, when we did the adopter space at front of High Playground, there's very strong standards for adopter space signs. So what I need to do is work with Commissioner of DPW to make sure whatever the signage would look like for naming of a square.
So these things have to be consistent throughout the city?
Exactly.
Do you have an idea of what that looks like?
No.
Okay.
So what we probably envision is just a small sign as we can do an unveiling, and then work with the city and come up with what the permanent sign would be. Right now we're 2 to 3 weeks before Village Day, and so we potentially get the permanent sign, but I'd rather thought put into it and, you know, the discussion back and forth with DPW.
Any other questions?
The last time something came before our committee was then in your area. San Miguel, San Juan. San Donato.
That's not my area.
That was controversial.
That's Ward 1. That's Mr.
Yeah, right here.
We did one subsequent to that. We did the square for Don Bianchi on the
corner. That's right, we did.
Court in Adams, and it was no problem.
And we spoke with Philip Bramway back in, it was the 80s?
90s.
You might want to check that sign on the corner of Hawthorne and Murphy Court.
There's also one for in Ward 8.
There's one there we did for Don Bianchi.
Right.
So even though Rodney called me this afternoon to complain about off-leash dogs,
yes.
Even though he did that, I will smoke you.
You're moving approval, Susan?
Yes.
Any other questions? Any more discussion? All in favor? 4, 5, 6, 7. Very good.
New High community, thank you very much. And we invite you to Village Day when we actually do the ceremony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
John, I can talk a little bit about the sign.
Because he's supposed to come to that. The Boston College I just want to make sure he's not.
Okay, still there?
Yeah.
Well, Hannah wants to be part of this next one, doesn't she?
Okay.
I mean, that she did?
Maybe not tomorrow.
She's the one who this one.
Maybe you call me Friday. I would think so.
And then, right. Well, program for services, we'll be busy.
Good luck.
Hey, see you guys on the chat with you. Bye, guys.
Bye. Take care. We are waiting for the possibility that...
Yes.
get either Ruth Ann or Flint Shuttle for this next presentation.
Did you notice the fancy chairs we have? Are they still here?
They were just redone.
No, she's talking about the fancy chairs out there.
Around the side. Did you see those?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
The whole the table's been refinished.
That I noticed.
Yeah.
The chairs.
Paint, the memorabilia.
Rough your own.
And the room's getting a new carpet.
Yeah. Yeah. Better with a new carpet.
But they said it only took a guy from building for a day, an afternoon, to do this table.
About,
so they're going to do all of them.
Contacting me if she wants to come to the meeting. I don't see that.
I'm not saying
that. We are holding this chair.
Well, can you just pass over it and then go back to it?
We're done for a while.
That's where it's coming up.
They seem comfortable to me.
I did email him.
Maybe it's just the one
on
my desk that I
saw. All right, we're going to skip this item. Maybe Clint will show up a little later and we'll have him discuss this with us. I understand, but, you know, we got to have somebody. Okay, we're going to wait for a little while, maybe Clint will show up. Next item, 114-12, is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $300,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding phase one of a multi-phase project for energy efficiency upgrades at multiple buildings. Josh, is this with Josh?
Yes, here. But he's going to get Bob, and here's Clint. Do you want to go back one?
Clint's out. All right, let's go back to the other one.
Okay, back to Clint.
Where are we?
153-12.
Commissioner of Public Works requesting that the Board of Aldermen approve the city's acquisition of a public way easement from Boston College. The parcel of land is 12.1 by 8.2 or 100 square feet in area and will be used to place a traffic signal. This has nothing to do with the lights and the poles that we already approved, does it?
No.
This is independent. This is totally independent. Okay, who's going to present this? Where is he? Where do you go? Would you please join us at the table, please?
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good
evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Good
evening. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Good evening.
This item before you is a request for the city to grant an easement to Boston College. They are essentially, I'm sorry, it's sort of a backwards easement. The Boston College would like to build a pedestrian crossing signal. We have determined through working with the design consultants that the street right-of-way is too narrow to fit the mast arm pole without narrowing the sidewalk too much. So Boston College is giving us an easement of about 100 square feet on their property so that the signal pole can be installed. We will only have the easement for the purposes of installing and maintaining this signal, which is being done at Boston College cost. Once the signal is done, we will accept it and own and operate it. But as you can see from the easement, it will primarily be used by Boston College faculty, staff, and students, but we believe in Public Works it's a needed and excellent safety improvement that we probably couldn't otherwise afford. So we thank Boston College for their willingness to assist us in this endeavor. With that, I'll answer any questions. As you might know, it's one of three hawk signals or high activated crosswalk. You have to borrow some letters there to get hawk to work. But we have three going in this summer. This is the third. The other two are at Craftsmanwood and Parker and Theodore. So we'll have lots of, well, three new signals, hopefully, by this fall. And this is the third, not at the city's expense.
Sounds good. Any questions? Yes.
What are they worth? What does an installation of a hawk cost?
Over
$120,000.
Okay.
Anybody else? Questions?
No.
Okay.
Okay, just checking.
Any more discussion? No. All in favor?
Thank you.
Seven.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Clint. Next, again, 114-12, the Ronald Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $300,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding phase one of multi-phase project for energy efficient upgrades at multiple buildings. Josh.
I'm with Bob Intro now.
Bob, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I know that this has been docketed as a $1.5 million fiscal year 13 capital improvement project for multiple buildings, and what we envision is breaking it up into probably three different phases, so that we'll take, you know, three or four buildings at a time, and you'll see docketed before you those clusters and the costs associated with it. Tonight, we'd like to give you an update on this program. However, I would ask this committee to hold this in committee because we feel that a couple things need to happen. One is the we'd like to advise the school committee because most of the buildings involved are the schools, and the savings will be impacting their budgets. They haven't formally been briefed on this, so I think it's important for them to know which schools are undergoing this. In the past, when we were paying for the improvements and realized the savings, we just informed them, but it was not so much of a discussion necessarily. And then secondly, that we would like to bundle a few more buildings together so that we're not going through the board too many times. Like tonight, we have a couple ready to go, but then it goes to finance, and it seems like if we could get, you know, three or four that would be working on throughout the summer, it would be more efficient for the board to just review them all at the same time. They have the same theory behind them. We'll be doing slightly different things in different buildings, but anyway, that's my request, is that we fold this, but I think it would be helpful probably to the members to get an update as to where we are as this thing moves forward. It's a very very visible and a high impact project for the schools, although you won't see any difference to the walls and the outside, you know, visibility of the school, but I think the comfort and the lighting and just the internal functioning of that would be much more improved. But Josh, if you could just take a couple minutes and talk about that.
Sure thing. All right. So as many of you were present for, kind of give you a brief synopsis as to, you know, where we were, where, you know, what we've done and where we're going as far as energy projects in the city of Newton. So we've got a couple projects that are teed up. We did the Noresco Phase 3 audit was completed. We're going to talk about that a little more in a little bit. But based on that audit and based on the costs that were presented to us, in addition to the fact that we hired Mache in our office to spearhead these projects, and also with an effort to make these projects more comprehensive, we determined that pursuing Phase 3 in Resco was not the best interest of the city or the schools. Instead, we felt that the best way to complete this work, as well as more, was to enter in, through the same chapter 25 of Mass Laws, to use the preferred vendor program. The preferred vendor program is similar to, you know, an ESCO. However, the difference is there's set markups. It's a much more canned program. There's a lot more diversity. There's a lot more control on the owner. There's more work, because as opposed to Phase 3, where you just say, here's everything, go do it, we got to manage projects individually. But what that allows us to do is not only ensure that it's more comprehensive, but it also makes sure that there's better quality control. Just turning an ESCO loose on 40 buildings was a scary thought. Even if we faced it, it was still kind of overwhelming. The other nice thing about the preferred vendor program is that there's
multiple vendors, so we can use multiple vendors at the same time, both from an engineering perspective and from the execution point. So you almost have them competing amongst themselves. Big picture, the mayor and the city has really pushed to make sure that we meet our 20% reduction goals. And in order to do so, we needed to be more comprehensive and tackle more than what Phase 3 Naresco was offering us. That said, because there's less overhead markup with the preferred vendor program, we're capable of taking on items that may have not had an attractive payback. Because the upfront cost is less, and the savings are the same, then the project becomes more attractive. Each one of these projects come before you, they stand on their own. We'll present them independent of one another. We'll talk in detail about each energy conservation measure, the paybacks, everything that's associated with that. The other nice thing about the preferred vendor program is that when they're picking the baseline year, there's no smoke and mirrors. We just look at what we used over the last 3 years and what we did and how much it's going to reduce, and that's it. It's not energy service companies, the way they typically do it is they call it cherry picking the baseline year. They'll look back and they'll say, what was our worst performing year? And they'll say, that's what we're going to reduce you from. Well, that's not hard. If that's your worst year, it would be like taking, last winter, which was pretty bad, and saying, that's what every winter's like. We can reduce you down, 20% from that. Well, that's not hard because on a normal basis, we're operating 10% less than that. So that's kind of where we're at. We are we're definitely being aggressive here. We have a couple more buildings that are being audited right now, and we're going to be coming before you in the coming weeks, just after we get done talking to the school committee with each one of these projects.
Okay, any questions? Go ahead, Chris.
So I read this stuff really carefully, thinking we're going to vote tonight, I appreciate that you want to hold the item. There's a couple things that I was listening to what you said. Isn't it also true that the NSTAR program offers rebates on some of these things or discounts in addition to charging less generally and less overhead? I noticed in here some pretty hefty discounts on some of the measures.
Yeah, the NSTAR rebate programs are maximized when you use the preferred vendor program, which makes sense. They have more control, so they feel more comfortable doing it too. It just increases the amount that they'll invest or rebate for given projects. So for all of the efforts that we're doing through NSTAR or NGRID, there's rebates that are offered back.
So it is a rebate, not a discount. You get the money back afterwards, or does it reduce the cost up front?
You could do it both ways, actually. And that's part of one of the things we'll talk about when we come through with the project. They can either bill you for the project less the rebate, or they can bill you for the project and send you the rebate. Mm-hmm. Different communities, want it different ways depending on how it works.
We've been working very closely with the executive team at NSTAR. They've given us some really top-level folks to work with on that rebate program, and they're willing to front-load those, knowing that because it's preferred vendor, so they know who's doing the work. They are going through all our numbers as well to verify that those savings will be met, and so they're willing to adjust the timing of those grants so that in the end, we don't have to pay our principal. When our principal and interest are due, we will have money to be able to pay that. So they are working very closely with us. They're very interested in getting Newton to reduce, and because they have requirements through DCU.
So if I could follow up on that, then one of the questions I've always had about this program, and I've had a lot of conversations with you and Maureen and so forth, and as much as I support the work, because I think the work is necessary to do anyway, it's like serious maintenance work that we have to do on our buildings. In order to, especially now where you're suggesting debiting the utility accounts for each building as a way of paying for the debt, right? Or debiting, essentially taking the savings. So how you actually track the usage and the relative savings. I mean, who's doing that in the city, and how is it being accounted for? And is that what they're helping you with, or is this still an ongoing conversation?
No, Bob's right. We've got a tremendous amount of support from NSTAR on this, not only in the upfront, but also, so we kind of did our own, you know, analysis of all the buildings, and Mate went through and determined what the worst offenders were and how we should have. And then we turned over to them and said, you as experts independently assess our project. Let us know if we're on track. They looked at it and said, spot on. You know, we support this 100%. To answer your question, they assist in everything right through the end, measurement verification, what you're really alluding to, making sure that we're getting what we paid for. Because not all, you know, it's not just did this work or did it not. It's, are you operating it correctly to make sure that what you invested is reaping, you know, you're reaping the benefits of that. So
just one more question.
Go ahead.
So therefore, that I mean, these buildings have been sort of waiting. We've been waiting for this equivalent of Tier 3 for a long time. So what's the current time frame then to come back with the first? You said three or four buildings.
We are looking to do the school committee in the next 2 weeks, and then the next available meeting. So I think it's in a little later June that we're looking to come back.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? Lenny?
Scotty.
Scotty, you got on my phone. I looked at Lenny.
Just so I'm clear, Josh, the $1.5 million is for all the buildings listed, and the $300,000 was just for CAP. Is that correct?
Correct. But when we, just so you know, on that point, we are that those numbers are going to be revised when we come back to Cabot. I just want to make sure everybody, I'm sure, is thinking Cabot School. Why on earth would you start there, knowing what we know? But one of the reasons we did is when we started this process, we wanted to kind of do a pilot program, kick the tires on this preferred vendor program. In order to do so, we were under contract with Noresco still. That was one of the buildings we didn't have to touch. So we have to do a full-scale audit, what it would be if we weren't going to touch that building in the next 30 years, to really see how comprehensive they could be, and then now we're scaling way back. So, you know, those numbers will revise before we come to it.
Is this the item that Marcia had called me on? He said that he wanted to have the numbers were changing?
Yes, and we will revise that before we come back.
So we were going to amend it tonight, but we don't have
to. We don't need to tonight, no.
Okay, so are there any other questions?
I'm assuming, but I didn't double check it or cross-reference it, that all of these items tonight that are for bonded indebtedness are part of the FY13 capital improvement plan that was recently submitted to us within the budget.
That's correct. Yes.
There's nothing that's new that's here that we haven't seen before.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
So the Noresco phase 3 was, what did you say, 88 projects? What did you say?
I said it was approximately 40 buildings.
40 buildings?
Yes.
And how much was that for? How much did they say that?
Their last proposal, I believe, was $5.8 million.
For all? And how many buildings are here? 20 or something?
So I think I know where you're going, if I can jump ahead. Basically, the difference is, we're getting more work, exponentially more work done with an 8-year payback, as opposed to Noresco's proposal was $1.3 million more, and it was a 15-year payback. So if that gives you an idea, it's night and day.
So are there things left on the list that are still in the CIP, or would you be, you know, the buildings that you're not, the projects that you're not getting to from the Noresco list?
No, I think we're doing most everything. The rest of the touched some of the really, really small field houses, things that were really, really small. We have so much work to do right now that is very attractive. We're going to focus on those. That'll be the 3 years, you know, we'll push out, and then we can start pulling some of those smaller buildings. And at that time, technology changes in an instant. So there's going to be, by that time, we may be into another lighting retrofit. You know, we don't know. There's a lot of things.
So how long will it take to get these done?
Right now, we're planning on 3 years total. It could accelerate, and I anticipate it will. But again, this is where we're just getting started with NSTAR. We weren't, you know, we're not completely sure how fast they'll move. But in recent meetings with them, they're, because of the city's commitment to this, they're looking to accelerate as well. If we're on board, they're on board. So
can I just ask one more question?
Sure.
When So when you come back to us with more buildings, mm-hmm. will you want all the money for all 3 years in advance?
No, certainly not. No, we'll come back, like Bob was alluding to, we'll come back with, you know, in chunks.
Okay.
Four projects. You know, we'll ask for the money for each one of those projects. We'll go out, we'll get them done. Once we get in, you know, probably halfway through construction, we'll start the audits on the next floor, and then when the audits are done, we'll just keep leapfrogging.
Okay.
And, you know, as we move forward, we're going to become more and more comfortable with these vendors. We can accelerate if necessary and go from there.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
I just wanted to take this opportunity because I'm hearing that you're working with NSTAR senior people and that they're really excited about us working with them. And all I can think of is the fact that we have lights that are still out because there's this lawsuit because they won't let us connect or fix or go in the manhole. I'm wondering if we can leverage this relationship to get something done.
I'm actually testifying against NSTAR at the Attorney General's office next month for their poor performance in a storm. But they are so big.
I know. I'm just thinking if you're high up, maybe. I don't know. It's ridiculous that they don't notice we exist when they come here and want something and know we have to grant them something. But now they're trying to encourage us.
Well, they're offering us a handout in one, and we're looking to sue them on the other.
Well, that's 5 in the morning, then we'll have a ceremony in the afternoon.
I just thought of the shot in the dark.
Very true.
Yep.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask, on that preferred vendor program, you know, I know when Noresco came in, you know, we had people in there and they gave us a whole presentation, you know, big to do. Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can point us to, you know, some info about the preferred vendor program?
Oh, certainly.
Is there anything you can provide us just because...
I tell you what, that's a great point. When we come back to present it, we'll start the presentation with just a brief summary of, and it'll be included in your packet ahead of time, but a brief summary of Chapter 25 and how the preferred vendor program exists. I can kind of get into that in a little bit of detail as to...
It doesn't have to be a lot, but we're kind of moving away from Noresco.
Yeah.
And they were here, and we went through a whole thing with them multiple times.
I think
maybe we should just kind of understand what the preferred vendor program is.
No, I completely agree. That's a great point.
We in this, two things. One is we'll bring back a timeline showing the 3 years in which the buildings are going to be staggered. And we have that all the final at this point. And the second is, this really ties into another docket item tonight, which is where we were on the hook for that audit, and we did not pursue that with them for this $5.8 million endeavor, and we would have to pay for the audit. We knew that when we made the decision, so you'll see that we'll have to pay for that.
Mark.
Forgive me if my question is simplistic. I just want to understand this. So we're going to go out, just using Catholic School as an example, and there's a group of preferred vendors put out there by NSTAR. How do we select that vendor?
So the way it works is it's NSTAR goes out every year for preferred vendors. There's two different phases. They have engineers, and they're kind of design firms that they go out and select every year. They're pre-screened. They work through the IG's office to do that. And then there's the actual preferred vendor, the contractors, the guys, the actual tradesmen. They go off with both of those, and they all work together. There's a number of them. In many communities, this is one of the ways that working with NSTAR really helped us. In many communities, the way they do it is they'll have one engineering firm and one preferred vendor that will do one building at a time. And that's really, you know, we didn't want to do that because it would have taken us forever to get it done. So by working with NSTAR, they agreed to kind of dispatch multiple engineers and multiple preferred vendors to support not only accelerating the program, but also kind of good business practice within the community.
So they pick, when you say preferred vendors, it's their contractors that we're putting in place.
Yes, it is.
We're not selecting the contractors at all.
That's correct.
And we are, I'm just going to focus on Cabot School because it helps me understand. So for Cabot School, assuming it's at $200,000, you come to us, we approve it, get bonded, right? And basically we pay NSTAR this money and they go do the work. Through
yes.
their preferred vendors.
Yep.
And quality control, what's the quality control?
It's going to be the same aspect, but much better that we have with Naresco. It's a third party, of course, but the difference is, because we have different vendors, the preferred vendor program through the utility company, it's within the memorandum of understanding that if we're at any time not satisfied, they'll pull that company and put a new one in.
What if there's a cost overrun on the job?
The cost is set. It's a contract just like any other. So if it's $200,000, it's $200,000.
But what if there's, you know, every contract has that and then there's an extra. So what happens if there's an extra?
A changeover would be something that is presented to the city at their option, but the contract is the contract. If they were, you know, for instance, let's say they got in there and they found asbestos, that was, you know, some asbestos pipe, I think most likely in that case, they would tell us that we would do that because it would cost us a lot less. They would opt to do it. They can get anything done. That's Chapter 25. They can do what they need to do to complete these ECMs. But, you know, they're not in this, NSTAR anyways, not in this to make money. So they're going to tell you to do whatever is in the best interest of the city. So that's how we would handle situations like that.
May I ask just one more question?
Go ahead.
So the price for this, how is that determined?
So when they do an audit on, we'll use Cabot as an example. So first thing, one of the easiest energy conservation measures to think of is lighting. They go through, they use lighting controls, they determine how many lights there are, how long they're on per day. They use that information to put into their calculations what replacing the lights from a 32-watt to a 28-watt light bulb would do. The preferred vendor program had set prices, and this is what I meant about set prices. It had set prices for everything, for every light bulb, every fixture, every ballast, everything is set. It's all open book. You look, so they go 28-watt bulbs equals this times this, that's your dollar value. There's our 10% markup. It's all completely transparent. Ballast, same thing, right down the line. So you know exactly what you're paying for, and then you total it at the end, and that's your bill.
And the savings is based on their calculation.
Savings is based on if that's a 32-watt and we're going to go to a 28-watt, 4 watts less times this many hours that it operates a day is your savings.
Very helpful.
No problem.
Well, I think the quality control question is a really good one, and I'm sure we're going to be watching anyway, especially as it gets rolled out. But I wanted to actually, I'll move hold on this, but I wanted to say that I thought these materials, although we're going to get into them in more detail next time, I thought they were really very good and simply presented, which was different from how I felt about when we were getting presentations from Naresco. I did not think it was clear and straightforward. I thought there was a lot of, you used the phrase smoke and mirrors, but I thought it was just confusing, and so that, you know, there was some speak about it, but it just didn't wash.
Yeah.
So, did you prepare this stuff, or did...
That's Maciej.
Maciej prepared, okay, mm-hmm. So this didn't come from NSTAR.
No.
So, that probably tells why. I mean, it's just very clear, and it was easy to get through for me to understand what's being proposed here. So thank you.
Yeah,
I can get out of four holes, but one question. In the example that you just gave about the light, and, you know, what you're going to pay for and the savings that are calculated, is there anything done on the back end to... show that savings has actually been realized, or do you just, you know, this is what it's going to be because we know how much 4 less watts are going to save?
That's the measurement verification portion at the end. That's something that NSTAR works with us to make sure we can do. Because lighting, it's a fairly easy one. You can look and you can say, you know, 4 watt reduction and there's 1,000 lights, it should have, you know, 4,000 watts for reduction. But for something like energy management systems, as we get further down the road, that's where measurement verification is crucial. That's where you're going to determine if, you know, they just handed you the keys to a Ferrari, you've got to make sure you're driving it. You know.
Right, so the lights, they don't come in and measure after, right?
Measurement verification is something we do with utility bills, with actual data from the utility companies. As far as measurement verification, it's not you know, the utility company doesn't come in afterwards and kind of retro commission, if that's what you're kind of referring to.
Well, these are the masses. Alderman Crossley and I were at a thing that Chang was put on about, you know, a small business energy savings program, and the vendor there using the line.
Yep.
So they came into my building, and, you know, that's basically what they did. Even though they have this list of six things, they're only doing one, which is count lights. Mm-hmm. All right? So anyway, so they counted their lights, and they came in, they showed me how much it was going to cost and how much I could save. And so I asked them, is there any way that the savings are actually verified? And they said, no, they know what the savings are. So I was just wondering if they come in and verify for the city.
So Lime is an energy services company. They're in ESCO, like Noresco. I would call them back up and say, you do provide measurement and verification. It's something that's required for any ESCO. They can tell you that they don't want to do it, but they're more than capable of it. So.
On that point, I think the way that was NSTAR was involved in that program also, the one you're referring to. Right. So with NSTAR's residential programs and this small business one, and this one too, mm-hmm. there's a limited. They do still limit the types of materials they use and the types of measures they. I guess they're really the means and methods for accomplishing things.
They certainly do.
So that is a difference in the program. You know, so you've gone through that for our buildings to make sure that those materials and means and methods are appropriate and the right mix of stuff. That's what we want.
Exactly. I think that they're everything you just said is great on NSTAR. The really only limiting factor is that if it's not cost effective, mm-hmm. they're not going to recommend it. So if a city out there or a town out there wants to do something that's a 50-year payback, they're going to say, sorry, we're not going to be on board.
But it's much more nuanced than that, in fact. Let me use one example, and so people's eyes will glaze over. But there are certain insulation materials they will not use.
Right.
And they say that they are, they're more expensive. But when you're talking about a municipal building, you want a long-term fix. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do something that's going to deteriorate in 15 years or, you know, not work as well. So that's what I mean when I say.
Yeah, we did ask that question, like closed cell is what you're referring to.
Yeah,
I'm assuming.
Or any sort of foam.
Yeah, well, they're actually starting to open up the open cell, but closed cell foam,
we don't have to go into particulars, but
they are open to that as long as what they're really after is the blended project. So they're willing to entertain things that may be outside of that, you know, the kind of cookie cutter stuff, but it can't throw the whole project into something that's not a good investment for them or us. So,
okay.
At least from the municipal side.
Suggesting those might be different. What's good for them may not be the best thing for us.
Okay, we have a motion to hold. Any more discussion? All those in favor? Seven. Thanks, Josh.
I was a little impressed with it.
I think you just try to save money,
personally.
Yeah, right. Next item, 112-12, is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $250,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding the design and construction of mechanical upgrades at the Burr Elementary School.
No, we got more on the next page. Oh, I'm sorry, in the packet. Yes, this is it.
Alright, so the Burr School. We have over there a pneumatic control system that was installed 45 years ago. Pneumatic is an air-based system that controls the heating and ventilation throughout the building. It basically forces air against valves and actuators that shut and open valves that control the heat and fresh air exchange in the buildings. Pneumatic air systems were all the rage many, many years ago. They're not now. Not only is the system 20 years beyond its useful life, but it also back in the 80s, with my research, the air compressor heads failed. This is the air compressor that was commissioned in 1967. These are the heads that have been replaced, the shiny blue pieces here. They were replaced recently, and they've been replaced many times. When this happened back in 1979, I believe, when the heads failed, there was oil that that circulates throughout these heads, that, you know, just like a car. And when they failed, it actually pushed oil into this tank, which then pushed oil into those pneumatic lines. Doesn't seem like a major deal. However, there's no way to get it out. Think about if you were to put oil in every electrical line in your house, all through the walls, all through everything. What happens is when this oil gets out there, not only does it dry out and crack the pneumatic lines, which leads to air leaks, but it also gets into your end devices, your contactors, your thermostats, and every, what that causes, it causes those to fail. Those thermostats fail open, meaning 100% heat. In addition to this, when the oil gets in the lines crack out and start to leak, you can't maintain air pressure. So what you'll see is this thing is constantly running. It shuts off a couple times a day. Think of it like the air in your tires. This is supposed to be a tight system, so this air compressor should really only run every couple days, you know, for a few seconds to kind of maintain that pressure. In this case, it never shuts off. What that means is that air pressure is never satisfied. And if air pressure is never satisfied, even your thermostats that are working aren't getting the air required to send a signal to shut the heat down. So what you end up having is you have Jack Tobin, who's the head custodian over at the Burr School, run around trying to shut this down, turn it off, shut this down, turn it off, to try to maintain kind of some semblance of reasonable temperatures over there. And then, in addition to that, when you shut this down, everything fails open. So then he has to run around his classroom and try to shut down the isolation valve. It's just not working anymore. So I'll show you a couple other quick pictures here, just to kind of make the point. So this is the drain. So any air system, any high pressure air system or low pressure air system, is going to have condensation that forms in it. This should be relatively clear. It would be just water that comes out. As you can see, it's oil, and it's constantly oil. So when this blows down, you're shooting oil out, which tells me that we still have the problem and it's not going anywhere. So anyways, what we're going to do now is, with this project, what we're looking to do is we're looking to replace the pneumatic air system with a direct digital control system, as well as go, you know, as part of that, you need to go through and you replace the valves and actuators that operate the heat and the fresh air and exhaust in the building. Because even your best control system, if the actual mechanicals don't work, it's not going to do you anything. So that's what we need to do to improve the environment and kind of learning environment and the operational efficiency of the building. In addition to that, what this provides us in the end is the same system that we have over at Newton North High School, or Newton South High School, or FAK, which is really exciting because I think a lot of you saw the chart that that I showed about Newton North and what Dave Stickney has been able to do with that building. And he's itching to go. The problem is, with a building like this right now, he can't operate that efficiently. You know, the custodians over there trying to run around and shut valves. But if we give him the keys to this, to a new system like this, he can drastically reduce the energy costs. What's even more exciting about this project is that because the windows were just done, this is kind of a more comprehensive project. You now have efficient windows, so you're going to have a better envelope, you got a more efficient heating system, you got two relatively new boilers. This all kind of goes together to really improving the efficiency of the building as well as the environment.
Thank you, Cheryl. Couple of things. Do you have a breakdown of the construction, or is it just, I mean, usually there's, is what that entails?
So we don't have a breakdown of the construction costs, because in order for a project like this, in order to get that breakdown, we have to have a designer go out, do a valve count, do an actuator count, do a control point count. With an energy management system, the cost for materials is actually not excessively high. The expensive part is actually the labor. And in order to determine what the labor is, you literally have to go up into all the ceiling to figure out what it's going to take to run wires throughout the building.
So should we be appropriating design services first before we know what the cost will be? That way we can get that we will know what the cost is?
That's completely up to you. In the past, it's been you guys have appropriated the full amount, just like a boiler.
Yeah.
Is it? It seems like more than a boiler. You said you all the thermostats and.
Well, even so, a boiler is more than a boiler. When I come in for a boiler, I'm doing condensate tank, pumps, valves, insulation, controls. So it's complicated too. Similar to this.
You have to replace the pipes.
For this project? No.
No, just this.
Just valves, valve. Actuators, okay. And the control system itself. No, not
on
this one.
So you're not going to find any asbestos anywhere when you're
going to these univents, we went through, Dave Sickney and I actually met over there, and we went through all these univents. The advantage is that for this project, all we need to do is work within the univent itself. All the controls are there. So when you open it up, you can see what you're working with. Those univents in that era, nothing was insulated within them. So there's no asbestos to be found. It's just fair fight.
Do we have something else? Sorry.
Could I interject for just a minute? Sean is whispering in my ear. It might be useful that this is a school project, and so you have to do the work over the summer, and if we appropriate the entire amount now, this could be a turnkey operation and be done in time for school.
Okay.
That is true. I don't want to push.
Yeah.
Push, no, but it, yes, it is.
That's
it
a good point.
Makes it a lot easier.
I had one more thing, and I forgot what it was. Sorry. That's okay. You're all set?
Yeah,
okay.
I'll let you know when I
Scott?
No, it was actually the point I was going to make, because whereas I would agree with you, Cheryl, about the, you know, historically a lot of these, you know, we've done the design money, but seeing that, you know, the schedule that's right under it says July to August would be designed, that leaves us in the middle of the summer, we're not going to be meeting.
Right.
But at the same time, it doesn't sound like it's going to be ready for the start of school. They're talking about the bidding and construction will last through the end of November. Mm-hmm. And that's if it's done in July. So I guess my point is, I don't support moving the whole thing, but it was just kind of on the point that Sean was making. But I don't think it'll be done.
So
it's
not
going to
be done
over the
school.
For
the heating season, I guess. But
it'll be up to the heating season. But the more time you get in the summer, the better, even for designs, because like I said, for design, you need to get up into all the ceilings. Mm-hmm. So. And you can go into every classroom and top ceiling tile. So if we can get the summer to execute, that's certainly, you know, and if we can accelerate this and get even a couple of weeks in the summer, it goes a long way, especially when you got to demo things like that gigantic air compressor.
Cheryl, did you have a follow-up?
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Just one thing. So you're popping ceiling tiles.
Yes.
I just sort of, I'm thinking of the, when we realized that the, there were pipes that were covered, and we had to, so that's not going to be an issue when we're popping ceiling tiles, we're not going to see anything up there.
No, because we're not touching pipes.
Okay.
No, we're not disturbing any insulation, we don't have to touch any pipes in the ceilings. All of the heating distribution is in the classroom itself. So pipes feed into the classroom, we don't have to touch those until it gets in the unit.
Thank you.
Mark?
The fact that there's oil in these places that you described, that's not going to increase that cost.
No, because you're ripping it out. It's just going in the garbage.
Does anyone else have any questions? Lenny?
So there will be work done in the fall while school is in session?
Yes, there will. Okay. And we've done these projects, similar projects in schools during school, the Brown most recently, and then the day before that.
So I'll move it.
Thank you. Actually, if no one has any other questions, I guess I'd just like to ask you about the cost. And since you've done boiler projects before, I don't remember, at least in my tenure, you're coming back and asking for more money to replace a boiler. I mean, you're fairly sure within a reasonable percentage of this system when you come
yes.
up with that number?
Yeah. No, the nice thing about energy management systems is that there's a price per point. And you use that price per point to kind of develop construction costs.
Okay.
It's kind of a back of the envelope thing, but it gives you a real good sense as to what it is. And having coming right off the tails of doing a couple of these, we got a pretty good handle on what it's going to cost us.
Do you have any guesstimate on energy savings then?
These are tough. They don't like to. And here's the reason is that oftentimes when we get in there, what happens is when the thermostats, when this fails, the thermostats fail open and it gets hot. With the fresh air dampers, they fail shut. So you don't have any fresh air. When you don't have fresh air coming in, you're not heating that cold fresh air. So there's going to be give and take. You're going to have savings from the thermostats, but by bringing cold required fresh air into the classrooms, that has a negative effect. I still think that it's going to be a far cry from being a negative project. I think it's definitely going to be solid savings. If I were to throw a number, I think you're looking at somewhere to 8 to 10% reduction. So it's good. It's not astronomical, but it's good.
Okay. Plus you have a custodian who can actually do maintenance work on the building.
Yeah.
So thank you. We have a motion to approve. Are people ready to vote? All in favor? Motion passes. Next item is 111-12, His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $60,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of funding the repair of masonry and related surfaces at the Bowen Elementary School.
All right, so the Bowen Elementary School, in FY 12, I think FY is right, the board approved $25,000 for design services associated with the repair of, numerous masonry projects at the Bowen School. This was one of those projects, if you remember, that it could have gone either way. We thought it was going to be fairly small, but we weren't positive. The good news is, it was on the small side. It wasn't big. We had three things that we're looking to tackle here. We have a chimney that has step cracking throughout all the way down on all four sides, which is really going to be the bulk of our money. We have window wells on the parking lot side of the Bowen School. And what we have here is that, for whatever reason, when they designed this, these grates were welded in place and then the concrete poured over top, so there's no way to get into them to clean them out. The drain's at the bottom, but this has got 4 feet of leaves in it. So what we weren't sure, and we didn't know before the design, was whether or not there were drains in it, because the plans didn't call for them. It seemed counterintuitive that they wouldn't have drains. Sure enough, that's what you see here. They were able to poke around and find that there are drains down there. So as opposed to having to go through and either build an awning out over this or install a drain system, all we're really going to do here is remove these two. We will clean everything out, snake those drains out, make sure that they flow correctly, and then go back with something on hinges so that we can get in there and clean it as a, you know, an annual PM. So that's that piece, and then we have one.
What's the wood over the grate?
That was because we had to cut this open in order to get in there, so the wood was just cut as a hole temporarily. And then the last one is here. Same thing, we looked at, you know, this was hard to tell as to how bad this was. The window wells are off over here. If you go right down the stairs, there's a crack right along the foundation that runs right down through here. One of the challenging things about this site is anybody that knows Burr, it's pretty tight, so you got parking lot right up to the doors right here. So we weren't sure at that time if we were going to need to excavate and go down kind of behind here and seal from within. Upon looking at this, we determined that we intend, in fact, seal this from outside, and then as part of this, we're going to clean this out. We suspect that that the 90 on this pipe right here may have collapsed, which is fairly minor. We're just going to do a small saw cut. So those.
This is Bowen, right? You just said Burr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Stuck on Burr. This is Bowen. So those are the three projects. The We have a cost estimate. It did come in right at $60,000 what they're anticipating. The good news is the design, I believe, is $9,200. You guys approved $25,000, so we'll be turning back those design funds because this didn't turn out to be as big a project as we had thought it would be.
Okay. So anyone, Mark?
So this will cover all the masonry work that you've identified in the school.
All of the masonry work that we consider critical. Again, with the CIP process, we identify projects based on need. Everything that we identified, whether it was water infiltration or real structural concerns, will be identified with this project.
I appreciate that. So I take it there's still masonry there that you may deem critical, but maybe it's a little slightly lower sense of urgency?
Certainly. Something like, you know, when they walked up to the building, they said there's a lot of organics on the brick that should be asked to wash off. That's considered masonry. But we have organics on the water buildings that wouldn't raise the top.
I guess my question is, you mobilize forces to get them into the building to do work. Are there some benefits by adding on some of the perhaps less critical projects while you have people in there?
I think what we're really going to do, to be honest with you, I was talking with my office today, on that note, what we're going to try to do is bundle this with the Ward project. So when we put it out, we can pick up that economy of scale by having one project so that they could kind of, that would definitely bring the price down, there's no doubt in my mind. They can utilize the same crew. As far as having them do additional masonry work around the building, would it be less costly? It would, but there's nothing on this building that is critical enough to trump the other projects that are in the city right now.
May I just follow up?
Sure.
So, I understand that, but let's say it's 5 years from now, and we get a commission, a design team again to come back and relook at this to see?
No, there's nothing in the horizon, in the five-year plan, or even really beyond that, for masonry work at the first school. Bowen School.
I mean, I guess my comment is, I understand that prioritization. It seems to me that if you're going to be doing something in any building, you want to get it done. It feels patchwork. That's my observation.
Well, is what you're saying, though, that this masonry pointing work, basically, is you're doing the full extent of what's necessary at the school for the foreseeable future?
Yes.
And you don't think that's the case?
Well, that's not what I heard Josh say. I heard him say they're doing the stuff they feel is critical.
So is there other painting work on the list somewhere?
There's no, from our CIP or the school CIP, there is nothing on the list beyond this to do with the Bowen School.
No, but if I may.
Sure.
I thought you said there was other stuff, but you didn't deem it critical.
So, if you look at maintenance requirements for buildings, they recommend repointing to be done every 10 to 12 years. So, that said, we have 2 million square feet of buildings that should be repointed right now. So, there's plenty of work that we can do. It doesn't mean that we should do or need to do or that it's anywhere near the top of the list for the thousands of projects we have in the city.
Okay, Cheryl?
I'll move approval.
Anybody else?
I can't.
All right, ready to vote? All in favor? Thank you very much. Item number 110-12, His Honor the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate the sum of $250,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of upgrading mechanical systems at Lincoln Elliott Elementary School.
All right, Lincoln Elliott School. The Lincoln Elliott School has a variety of systems over there. It's one of the unique schools in that it has both steam and hot water. This presents a unique challenge because in order to do that, you have converters and heat exchangers and a lot of controls that go into that. In addition to that, you have the same thing that we have in a lot of our other buildings, and that is univents throughout the building that are a variety of ages, none of them newer than 25 years old, and some of them dating 40 plus years ago. Those have a life expectancy of 20 years. One of the striking things to me, obviously anybody that works in Lincoln Elliott or either the schools or us, we know that there's certainly issues with the heating system and the ventilation system at that school. But, I wanted to kind of quantify it to give people that weren't familiar with it a sense as to how bad it is. And so I took a look at our work order tracking process. And took a look at the univent issues. The univents are the distribution, the heat distribution in each classroom. I looked at a two-year period from 2008 to 2010, and a two-year period of 2010 to 2012, and there's a 667% increase in work orders where univents have failed. 667% increase. Basically, when you talk about mechanical systems like that, you hit a critical mass point. You can maintain something for so long, eventually you get to a point where maintaining it, all you're doing is keeping that thing running. And you're out there all the time trying to keep that relic going. In this case, as the docket letter suggests, it is beyond what we can handle with maintenance. They are at a point where they have failed and they need to be replaced. So I want to take this as an opportunity to kind of talk about briefly about the heating systems in the schools. Many of the principals and teachers think when you replace a boiler, that's your heat, and you're done. That's it. Now you got a new boiler, the school, the heat's going to be great. The problem is that the boiler is really just a source of the heat for the building. There's an entire distribution system, pipes and valves and controls and univents and fans and belts and all that stuff. And if that's not working, those are the things that people really see. The reason that we have focused on boilers historically is that if a boiler fails, you're in deep trouble. Trying to replace a boiler in the middle of winter will cost you a fortune, and you're going to have temp heat, you may have to relocate school. So we've always focused on the most critical piece of that. The problem is that replacing the boiler, if it hasn't failed completely, most people don't even know it's been replaced, other than the custodian, because he's not having to fight the thing every day. This is a project that really, not only is it desperately needed for the school, it's a feel-good project, because every teacher, everybody in that building is gonna have a smile on their face, because this completely changes the way their classroom feels. Not only the way it feels, but the way it sounds. Many of these U-vents, because they are so old, they're horribly imbalanced, they're very, very loud. You know, number one complaint from teachers is, I can put a sweater on, but there's nothing I can do when that thing's rattling away extremely loud. So what you see is a lot of these teachers will actually find a way to shut these things down, because they just can't teach. Now you have a situation where you don't have heat, you don't have fresh air, kids are getting tired, it just makes it harder to teach. So we really hit a critical mass over there. This project, again, we're looking at going through and replacing each unit vent to come as a packaged unit now with all the controls and valves and everything you need within the unit, as well as some controls and valves in the distribution system, specifically part of the conversion from hot water or from steam to hot water.
I have a question, if somebody else doesn't have one. Okay, so I appreciate the need to upgrade the distribution system. I remember that when we were looking at alternative systems at Newton North High School. Univents weren't even going to get on the list, but somebody wanted to have them on the list because they're the cheapest to put in, but they were by far the least efficient. At the point where you're ready to redo the distribution system, or maybe you can talk about how comprehensive a retrofit this is. You know, does it make sense to look at an alternative?
So we did entertain that possibility. There's a number of factors that weigh into this. The Lincoln Elliott School right now, it appears, in talking to the school, is number 5 on the list. Now that's a ways out. I'm not saying that it's right around the corner. But it does play into the fact that a hot water conversion, which is really what I would love to do, is kind of out of the question, because when we looked at the building based on the square footage, the hot water conversion was going to cost somewhere in the magnitude of $1.5 million.
Okay.
And really, that's your opportunity to really change to either fan coils or baseboard radiation or all of those lovely systems that I would love to have, because they're very maintenance friendly, much more efficient, they don't make noise, you know, but in this case, you know, we definitely look at those options. We have an on-call, you know, one of our on-call engineers who, you know, we keep them busy, so they'll throw some freebies at us. I had them come out at no cost to the city and really walk the building with us and take a look. And I asked them, I said, what do you think our options really are? Putting everything on the table, and they said, we'd love to do more, but really, UNIVENT is your best option, both financially and to improve the building.
Okay, so does anyone else have a question?
I just had a similar one to what I asked before. Before you said you were, on the other project, you're only working in the UNIVENT, now you're replacing it. Is there an opportunity to come across
asbestos? We took a look. There is a small opportunity, very small. I took our abatement company and our environmentalist through the building. It's not going to happen with the UNIVENT, but when we deal with those heat exchangers, those are open and exposed, so we can see what we're getting into. The valves themselves are covered in asbestos. I got a per unit price of $150. There's maybe 10 valves, so there is some exposure. We work that into this number so that we can absorb that.
Is that in the contingency or in the construction?
That's in the construction.
Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I'll move approval.
Ready to vote? All in favor? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, next item, 161-12. Is under the mayor requesting authorization to transfer the sum of $148,481 from the energy stabilization account to fund the energy audit conducted by Noresco.
Okay. This is phase 3 audit report.
We got a
bond. And I didn't even say that. You know, honestly, I talked to Monte before I left. I said, I don't know whether or not to bring it or not, because I said, I know if I bring it, somebody's going to say, that's $148,000 sitting on the table.
Especially which one you
want to say. I didn't know. But, you know, I didn't bring it. I figured there would be people that said, well, what do we get for our money? So,
that's even funnier than the
So, that said, we talked about phase three. It's a very detailed report. It certainly has value. Probably the biggest value that this has, well, two things. One is it quantifies all of our equipment in these buildings, all of our lights, the fixture counts, everything, which is priceless when it comes to maintenance and, you know, our buildings and knowing how they operate. There's, we beat them up big time to expand how comprehensive this audit was. We could have easily just walked away knowing that we weren't going to use them, but we kept that under our hat and pushed to get more and more information. By doing so, what this has allowed us to do is as soon as we separated from Noresco, we literally were able to take this whole binder and give it to NSTAR and say, here's our starting point. Take a look at everything, make sure everything, you know, makes sense, but this is where we want to go. Noresco looks at it and says, or NSTAR looks at it and says, this is great. You know, this is a lot of the groundwork that we need to do for things like fixture counts and, you know, operating hours. They go out and verify it all, but it streamlined the entire process. It also allows them to quickly identify those areas that Noresco missed, 100%. And I know Alderman Crosley would be very happy to hear that they were shocked at the lack of insulation as part of this project. They said there was a ton of opportunity.
Yeah,
you know, one of the things that we identified is ESCO's their business. You know, and this was never more obvious than after, in the middle of phase two, which is where I started to really dig on Noresco. They were bought out by the parent company of York, big air handling company, as well as a million other things. And if you read the press release, they were bought by this parent company strictly as an investment. It was a cash cow. That's all it was. They looked at the profit margins and said, we want them. And that's when I looked at it and said, wow, there must be something to this. We had looked at phase one and phase two. We had price checked. They were pretty good on that. Phase three was really where I think they saw it as their last bite at the apple, which is why they came in with a huge number and really a very small scope considering the number of buildings and the square foot of what we were looking at and buildings that were relatively untouched in a long, long time. So that said, this entire book is what has allowed us to utilize the preferred vendor program in fast practice. If it wasn't for this book, we would have had to start literally from square one, and the rest of our NSTAR would have had to have done one at a time, rolling all the way through, and it would have taken us, the initial, when we first looked at this, we met with Rise Engineering, which is one of the preferred vendor engineers, and they said, we can probably manage to do a building a year. We're looking at, all right, well, there's a 40-year plan. That's not going to get us where we need to get. But when we rolled this out on the table, it was a game changer for NSTAR. So,
what was that big number that the rest will get?
$5.8 million.
To do less work.
To do far less work, yeah.
Get it stuck in the company.
Well, when you're all done?
Yes, well, I didn't know if I was going to say this tonight, but I think I will after what you just said. So there was a time in your department where I think we would have been happy to have Noresco do the work because we didn't have other options. Mm-hmm. And I think things have changed so much. And just hearing all of these projects that we're doing, and I can remember even from the days of Mayor Mann that we're, you know, honoring in this room, that we just didn't look at projects the way we're currently looking at projects and really planning for the future in a very planful way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that we can move away from Noresco now and feel comfortable about it just says a lot about your department and everything that's there now. So I just think it's terrific.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, Maciej, when he first came in, he said, I think it was the mayor asked him, he said, Maciej, should we have used Noresco for phase one and phase two? And Maciej immediately responded, of course. You didn't have the resources to be able to handle this project by yourself. And he said, he went on to say, furthermore, we could proceed with phase three if you really wanted to. You know, I use an example, I forget the town, it might have been Quincy, but it was one of the ESCOs, and it took them 6 years in negotiations to get the price down where they wanted. So could we have held out and beat them down forever and eventually got what we wanted? Sure. We wouldn't have got the level of detail that, you know, we wouldn't have got the work we wanted. We could have probably eventually got the price we wanted. But, you know, looking at all those factors, and just like you said, with the way our department has changed and the staff that we have now, it just was a common sense. It didn't take long to come back and believe.
That's true. It feels good.
Yeah.
Any other questions? No. All in favor?
Move approval.
Oh, yeah, let's get a motion for approval.
Move approval.
All in favor? 7. Very good, Josh. Last one. 109-12. Is honor the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate a sum of $90,000 from bonded indebtedness for the purpose of repairing and replacing windows at Fire Station 4. Oh, did this one run me the wrong way? This is the man that's got a broken past here. It's his fault. I'm blaming him.
Who?
Clark.
All right, so Fire Station 4. The windows were replaced, I want to say, 5-6 years ago now. Just before I arrived, that does not mean that I don't take responsibility for it. What was identified was that the windows that were installed are leaking, specifically on the north side. There's 9 windows on the second floor that are leaking pretty badly, especially when you get driving rain. Straight down, not a big deal. Anything that drives against that side, which a lot of the storms come in that direction, are causing that to leak. So what we did was we got Thompson and Lichter, a engineering firm, to come out and evaluate the windows. Literally, used the fire hose, simulated driving rain against the windows. Obviously, they leaked. We determined what the cause was, constantly what they went through and identified. There were a number of things that we wanted to find out. Was it masonry leaking? Was it the windows leaking? Was it the installation? Was it the windows themselves? Was it a manufacturing defect? What was the issue? Thompson and Winter identified that a small portion of the water infiltration was due to masonry. That was something that we could quantify, we could see, we could handle, and we did. We resolved the masonry issues a month and a half ago. That certainly slowed the water down, but because it's such a small percentage of the issue, it's still going on. So Thompson and Lichter also identified, what's our best path forward. They obviously recommended that we go after the window manufacturer and the installer for damages. So their entire report, we turned that entire thing over to the law department. Weedy Young is working on that angle. But for the time being, because legal processes are what they are, it just put a bit of time, we feel it necessary to correct the problem and stop the water from coming into the building before it causes more damage. And obviously go after the company for those costs, which is why we've been so diligent about documenting everything from start to finish. So that said, there were a couple different approaches. The worst offenders are the 9 windows on the second floor. We could have just replaced those windows, and it would have been, I think, a $35,000, $40,000 project. The next option would have been, and this is assuming the masonry is already fixed, the next option would have been to replace those 9 windows and then repair all of the windows where Thompson and Lichter identified deficiencies throughout the building. That's the option we're going to pick. The third option, Thompson and Lichter said, was you could just replace everything, do all the windows in the building. But Thompson and Lichter said that we could not find fault or defect in a number of those windows, so it didn't make sense to replace windows that weren't leaking and show no default or defects. So that said, after looking at all those options, we determined, by working with the fire department as well, that the second option was the best option for the city at a cost of $90,000. So the plan, as I have behind me, and I apologize, it's black and white, we identify, this is through the Thompson and Lichter, we identify those areas that need to be repaired, and in the report that was sent out, it identifies specifically what needs to be done. So the nice thing about that report is that it will also lend itself to the actual design services and what we put out on the street. It's not in your packet, but it was sent out quite a while back. So just go through the repair sections are what they are, but I wanted to specifically show you those areas that
the screen is very large.
So this is the north side. If you're at Fire Station 4 and you go around to the back of the building on the opposite of the Crabtree side, go back to the parking lot and you look up the building, you have the Rich Kent LFA on the right, you got the bays are back behind here, the training area is on the left. So what these are the windows, the nine windows that we're going to be replacing as part of this project. This is where we have the biggest concern because this is where we have water that comes in when there's a driving rain. Everything else is going to be repaired to include not only caulking and sealing where we need to, but also making sure that all the leaks are operating correctly, really making sure that everything is functioning the way it should. In addition to this, we're going to, as part of this funding, we're going to go into the building, we're going to cut out the bottom portions of the drywall to make sure that there wasn't any mold or any, you know, moisture damage, anything like that. And then, in addition to that, there's also some minor sill damage that we're going to have to address. Really, a little bit of warping on some of the sills. So,
I got Cheryl, then I got Mark, and then I got Freddie.
Two questions. Thompson and Lichter,
I'll go after
did they determine that it was the windows or the installation? That was the issue.
They determined that it was the windows and the installation. So we're going to have to go after two different people. But they,
so we're not going to get anything because everybody's going to point.
Well, they were pretty detailed on it as to what it actually was. So
it could be both of them on only those windows.
Okay. Well, what potentially it could be is there could be a window defect that, based on incorrect installation, is magnified in these windows where it may not be magnified in another. And in some cases where these are the worst, because of poor installation, these need to be replaced, whereas other ones with the same manufacturer's defect, because they were installed correctly, aren't leaking and just need repair. So it's a kind of case-by-case basis.
I was hoping it was they'd find one or the
we
other.
We were hoping for a nice home run on this.
Yeah. We've been trying to get the end. We've been looking at this for no less than 2 years.
I know. The other question is, you mentioned masonry has to be fixed?
Masonry was fixed.
Or
sorry,
was fixed. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Mark. So, just to build on what Cheryl said, from the negotiation strategy, I'm in favor of appropriating the money, but from a negotiation strategy, if you go back to the manufacturer or the contractor and you say, look, we're going to incur a $90,000 expense, and we're going to look for you to pay it. You want to step up to the plate and maybe save $20,000 or $30,000 because you think it's a cost. And yep. That's something we're going to explore.
We already did.
And that was.
We started right off the bat. We were hoping because sometimes you get really reputable companies. And
it doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah, and I won't go down that road. I would suggest, and we'll talk about this, and we talked about it with the law department, that the company that installed these windows not be allowed to continue work in the city of Newton. I'm not going to name names.
We should put it in the database. We have a database of people suffering.
If that's the observation, we wouldn't want that. I mean, that's fine, and I wouldn't go that route.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, we documented it. We sent a letter saying, this is the problem, this is what, because we had a pretty good idea as to what the problem was. We brought in Thompson and Lichter because we knew this would likely be a legal battle. We needed somebody independent to allow
it. Their response is, no, it's not our fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because you mentioned the installer and the window.
Well, we didn't tell them that.
No. Oh,
there's no reason to tell them that. We just tell them that your windows are legal. Now, much more formal, obviously, a legal letter, but tell the window manufacturer, hey, the windows, they were installed per shop drawing, everything looks good, but your windows are leaking. We think it's your fault. You tell the installation guy that the windows are leaking and it looks like it's an installation issue. Because that's what we thought at the time. We didn't, you know, it was one or the other.
Nobody's saying, okay.
Yeah, nobody's stepping up.
Remember, Scott explained to Mark that most people, I think, are going to know this. This work was done prior to the state renovation.
Absolutely. That's the mistake that's bothering me. Well, Scotty,
No, I was going to let Lenny finish, because that was part of the point I was going to make.
Yeah, it just was ridiculous. They went ahead and renovated with leaking windows.
Decision at the time that, you know, we were already there when we were working on the roof of the windows and vice versa. I just don't remember. The decision was made to finish the envelope before we renovated the whole building, yeah. And then this happens.
Josh.
The other
you're
going to
keep... You're gonna
can
keep,
I just finish one
thing? Sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say that if I remember in some of the subcommittee meetings, I was actually kind of pleased to see the number, because I thought the number was much higher.
$250,000
originally that we were talking about, and it's at $90,000. But we also did some other work, so I still think we're ahead of the game.
Oh, we're ahead of the game. The masonry was $14,000. So we're light years ahead of the game.
When we were in subcommittee, I know the chairman of finance was not very happy at some of the numbers that he had originally heard.
What I'm having difficulty with is if you're replacing just some of the windows and you're saying they're defective, what makes the other ones okay? How do you know they're not, you know?
Because Thompson and Winter identified, they literally took these windows apart. I mean, we took them down at bare bone. We took everything apart. They didn't find the same manufacturing defects in all the windows. In addition, they found varying degrees of installation defects where they weren't installed the right way, either to shop drawings or to specifications.
So they took the good ones down too and put the good ones back?
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, we took everything.
All of them down?
Yeah, no, we went through every single window.
Well,
so couldn't they install
it? I still think that we're going to have problems later on. Go ahead, Deb.
So Thompson and Lichtner is a really good firm, and I'm pleased because their documentation, if anything's going to work, 9 times out of 10, or maybe 99 out of 100, it's installation, not the defect in the window. And that brings up quality control. So a couple of things. Is that contractor working in the city now?
Nope.
Okay.
I have not worked in the city since then.
Okay. Quality control is on our end, and that's, you know, I know in meetings with Sal and I, and just generally, and you all have been talking a lot about that, and the need for that, and to have more rigorous oversight, boots on the ground and so forth. But whoever was in charge of this, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know, really missed the boat. And I think it's reasonable also to bring up Fire Station 7. You know, Sal and I walked over there and had a look after the windows were installed.
You could see daylight after they were installed.
The flashing wasn't installed with the window. They had to take the windows out, reflash them and seal them. Put, you know, they had to do it over again.
Yeah.
Now, that was on their dime and everything, but how could you not see that?
That's a great point. And part of our efforts in this recent budget to hire an additional project manager, as well as what Alderman Krause is talking about, and we've been in talks with the administration about, whether it be project specific or whatever it may be, to get somebody in the field that can really give these projects the attention they need. In addition to that, I just wanted to say that one of the things that we had a meeting early on after we got everybody, kind of our team together, to talk about this, about, and I'll pose this to you, we have our own feelings, and it'll obviously be an open process whenever it comes up. But we really are not sure that doing a project like this, when you know the renovation is coming, doing it ahead of time is in the best interest. It may help out in the short term, but when you're replacing a system like that, like windows,
right.
And there's a lot of, you know, you don't know what kind of masonry issues are in there.
Right.
You could do it much more comprehensively with far better quality control when you do it all together as part of the renovation.
Could you describe some of the masonry issues to me, please?
Specifically, it was almost all one major issue, and that was flashing around the top of the window.
That's exactly what I said.
So
the top of the flashing around the window.
No.
It had to be, because without the flashing, you know, if the flashing was there, you wouldn't have had the problem.
Exactly. Well, but the blessing, I guess, is that if there was flashing, we may not have found out about this problem right away.
You wouldn't have had the problem.
Yeah, right? But we would have had a defect without even knowing it.
On the issue of quality control, the windows were, you know, done in-house, and in-house really stretched out before we had some of the project managers that we have now. Not to say that's an excuse, But that is a different scenario than what we went through at Station 7. We had a project manager. We paid somebody separately to manage that project. And so I can't understand why.
We still had a guy that worked in the clerk of the works, Lenny.
Right.
It's his ball game.
Why would you be seeing daylight in windows?
It's his ball game to go see the daylight through the windows.
Right. So on the one hand, as I said, I mean, we paid someone individually to watch that stuff. So
the guy is a hell of a nice guy, but it's time for passion. You should have seen this in Station 4.
No, we didn't have anybody. But
we had the same guy.
No, but the windows were done prior to the full renovation.
Yeah, we didn't have anybody when they were putting the windows in?
No. We had somebody within our own department, but we didn't really have. But what I'm not talking about Station 4 right now. We did pay someone to put some change to for quality control purposes, and now I hear that there's gaps in the windows.
They fixed them.
They fixed them.
Oh yeah,
they did fix them.
They fixed them.
The clerk was the same guy at Fire Station 4 as at Fire Station 7. We don't want to name names, fine, but it was the same guy.
That clerk did not have anything to do with the installation of the windows.
Oh, the original?
I don't, okay.
He did the windows in the roof ahead of the renovation.
He wasn't involved in that.
Okay.
It was like a normal...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
How sure? Who did it then?
With the building department. Yeah.
He works for the building department.
Yeah, but somebody
he works like on
somebody
call
had
for the building department.
Yeah, he definitely, I can assure you, I know because I've talked to both parties about this, he was not involved in the window replacement at Station 4.
Okay.
He was the clerk of the works for both Station 4 renovation and Station 7 renovation, and we are taking a hard look at who will be our field eyes moving forward.
Yeah. But
it's really important.
The overall, positive reports on Station 7. Are there other issues?
There's nothing anywhere near like this. We had an issue where things like the paint on the floor was not the correct paint. Now it cost us to call them back out what it was, the texture wasn't correct and guys were slipping. So I had to come back out and had to fix that. Yeah. Little things like, is even another outlet here? There it was a punch list. There were things that we certainly could have done better. There were things outstanding. Like, for instance, the washing machine downstairs.
I'm not worried about that. But there's nothing major.
Nothing major, no quality control issues. The biggest thing I could say is the paint as a major issue if you want to call it.
A major issue if the alarm goes off and they slip.
Oh, no, it was a major issue for them. No doubt about it. But
they fix that.
Yeah.
Anything else? Yeah, sure.
I'll move approval.
Any more discussion? All in favor? There's 90,000 going to the wind.
Josh, thank you so much. Really.
Can we somehow get a message to the water department? We're under the assumption that they're going to pursue this. If for some reason they should decide it's not worth it or whatever, could we please be informed? I don't want to ask 2 years from now how the loss is shown and find out they never thought they lost it.
Very definitely. Would you please take care of that, Chad?
Just
have an update.
Just give us an occasional update as to what's going on with the window, who's showing and so forth. Anyway, I guess that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
This is Dan, we're trying to win in Chicago.
San Diego.
San Diego.